As students begin heading back to school, do you think they'll be learning about the founding principles that made America the freest and most prosperous nation in history? Will they learn that our unalienable rights are God-given and not granted by government? Will they be given a full and honest account of our nation's history? The answer to all of these questions is yes for students at Hillsdale College. In addition to teaching college students, Hillsdale has extended its teaching to K-12 students and lifelong learners like you. If you're not doing so already, one of the best ways to start learning from the folks at Hillsdale is through Imprimis, Hillsdale's free digest of liberty. You can sign up for free at this special website for a limited time at dana4hillsdale.com. And you can look forward to Imprimis each month. It's interesting, useful, and free, and it's one of the best and smartest in conservative constitutionalist thought. Find out more about Hillsdale College and sign up for Imprimis at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com.
There are reports of people trying to loot down in Steinhatchee. And I've told all of our personnel at the state level, you protect people's property, and we are not going to tolerate any looting in the aftermath of a natural disaster. I mean, it's just ridiculous that you would try to do something like that on the heels of an almost Category 4 hurricane hitting this community. I'd also just remind potential looters that people, you never know what you're walking into. People have a right to defend their property. This part of Florida, you got a lot of advocates and some proponents of the Second Amendment. And I've seen signs in different people's yards in the past after these disasters. And I would say it's probably here. You loot, we shoot. You never know what's behind that door. If you go break into somebody's house and you're trying to loot, these are people that are going to be able to defend themselves and their family.
You know, neighborhoods are like a box of guns. You just never know what you're going to get. I was trying to think of the best summary for that. I couldn't think of it, but that seems like that's the best way. Hey, welcome to the show. It is Thursday. We're almost there, everybody. It's Thursday. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this first hour. And that was the governor yesterday. The left didn't quite know what to make of that, because Democrats in Florida were like, well, yeah, they were. I was looking at some of the responses on Twitter, and it was kind of funny because people are like, yeah, well, Kate, I ain't even mad. That's true. It's true. I mean, you can't be doing stuff like that. You can't be doing stuff like that in Florida. You shouldn't be doing stuff like that anywhere. But he's right. He's like, they got signs up that says, you loot, we shoot. You know, they're pretty Second Amendment about stuff. And so far, the response, there hasn't been any fatalities in Florida. And there was only one fatality in Georgia. And it's still sad. But it was a tree that fell on a woman's house. The response to the hurricane and the cleanup and the power, because they've been working to get everything back up quickly, has been pretty impressive. But they're used to it, though. I mean, it's Florida. It's like, how Colorado deals with snow. It's kind of similar how Texas deals with, what? I don't know. You know what I mean, though. So this, I would say immigration, but we're barred by the federal government. So I thought it was interesting because even CNN, was it CNN or CBS? Sorry, CBS. Audio soundbite 17,000. They said that, yeah, everything's been pretty quick. The response, everything has been, they've responded pretty quickly. Listen to this. They can't even really talk smack about it.
The governor brings up a really good point. Here in Florida, what they do well is respond, because they're so used to responding to these storms. So almost immediately in the Perry, Florida area where the storm made landfall, we heard that they had crews in checking on people, first responders into the area. So the response is pretty quick.
Response has been pretty quick. They've been pretty pleased with it thus far. And that's a good thing. That's leadership. And he's been doing a pretty good job of it, the Florida governor. And the workers out there, I had people telling me, because a lot of y'all we got a lot of Florida listeners. And we've been praying for y'all, by the way. But I have a lot of people that were telling me, man, we just stay, don't trust a puddle. because you know when they have the storm surges. And think about this. This is a terrifying thought. The flooding came. What's in the water in Florida? What do we always joke about?
Crocs, gators.
Guess what they got to worry about with them, that flooding and storm surges? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. You got to worry about gators. I don't know why I didn't think of that, but now that's terrifying. I think I'd be on my roof the entire time. And Florida people are like, you know, no big deal. What? I mean, you live like a man eating thing in the water. What? Can't even see it coming. Oh my gosh, I turned into Charlie Day. All right. So as I said, welcome to the show. Dana Lash with you. Listen coast to coast. And you can also stream the radio program, YouTube, Facebook, and channel 347, DirecTV. The hurricane's now a tropical storm. It's kind of petering. Isn't it? It's sort of leaving, going through the Carolinas, leaving, going to go out to the Atlantic, and we'll see what happens. But the power, I think, is the biggest thing being restored. So as that all happens, you also have Congress coming back into D.C. tomorrow. They return after their long summer recess, and we are going to see an absolute slap fight. Now, we were talking yesterday to James. I had a million questions for Congressman Comer, but he totally kicked me in the knee with the whole, Barack Obama needs to sign off on this. I mean, Kane and I, you should have seen us. We just kind of looked at each other like, dude, what? I am fascinated by that. And if you missed our discussion yesterday, I encourage you to go to Facebook and pull that up because the full discussion is up there. I hadn't realized previously that they had requested his sign off on other information that he really, apparently took the full 30 days because it's a 30-day response time. That's the clock starts then. But I didn't realize that they had asked him that before, and then he did it on the 30th day, but they don't know if he's going to do this one. That's weird, right? Because what's one of the big talking points that's out there that he might be implicated? How do you not know your VP's doing all of this? How do you not know that he's like merching this stuff out, conducting business from Air Force 2 and Marine 2? It was interesting, Comer's response, though, when I asked him about the Archives Administration. And I just want to put out or reemphasize that Trump was raided because they accused him of not cooperating with the National Archives. He was literally raided. Now, I go back to the first thing I asked. Does that mean we get to raid the National Archives? And can I take the stuff about the JFK conspiracy? I'll take that beat if you guys want to cover everything else. Just, I've always wanted to know, right? Is there some stuff in there? Do they got, because the stuff that they won't give to the House, it's not even classified. It's not like this is secret. They're just being jackwagons about it, stalling to help the President Daddy Showers McUnity and his son, Daddy Showers Jr. That's apparently what's going on. Got a lot of questions about it. Can you know that's what we're going to call him forever?
Yes.
I mean, fitting. Yeah, I mean, it totally is fitting. I'm just wondering about this. So the whole email exchanges, so you have the Marine 1 and Marine 2. I mean, that they were abusing this. This is something that we had talked about before, because remember when we I think this was maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago when we talked about how there were these photos of Hunter Biden on Air Force 2 and also even Air Force 1 with Joe Biden, but Air Force 2 going to these, when he was vice president, going to these different meetings and these Biden's meetings with these various foreign leaders. And now it makes sense when we know that they've been grifting, right? Now that we know they've been grifting, it makes sense that he's, tagging along. That's his front guy. He's there to talk business, right? And then Joe's there selling the influence. So we have this that he and they have all the emails that corroborate all of this, and that apparently Devin Archer was with them at one point in China, of all places, when they were on official business. So we've got that. But then also all these emails and the firms that they have that were exchanging emails between, it was Joe and Hunter talking about business when they said they weren't going to talk about business. So they had 1,000 emails. Just Now, there's, I think, what they say with Bob Peters' pseudonym, how many? 5,400? Yeah. So the latest batch, and this was something that the New York Post had published yesterday evening after we were off air. The latest batch is 1,000 emails specifically between Joe Biden and Rosemont Seneca. Now, do you guys remember what Rosemont Seneca is? That is the firm that Hunter Biden created with the CCP. They literally partnered with the Communist Chinese Party, which runs all their big businesses over there. And one of the top guys that's there in Rosemont Seneca is a top guy within the CCP. And it was all, I mean, they were all free-flowing emails. Rosemont Seneca was the Hunter Biden firm that did all the deals. Rosemont Seneca was the firm through which they facilitated China's acquisition of that cobalt mine in People's Republic of Congo. Right? That's the largest cobalt mine in the world. It first came to light a few years ago when ABC did this huge expose talking about how there were 20,000 kids hand mining cobalt down there. That's and what is cobalt used for? It's a rare earth element. That's part of Joe Biden's green new agenda. So they facilitated China's Belt and Road-esque acquisition of that cobalt mine. That was Rosemont Seneca that did that. And it wasn't just that. There were all kinds of acquisitions that they helped make on behalf of the CCP, because they were working with the CCP. That's really sketchy, guys, especially when you're, you know, we're trying to come up with ways to, I mean, it's kind of a cold conflict for all intents and purposes, but you're trying to figure out more diplomatic ways to push back against Chinese aggression and push back their aggression in the South China Sea and kind of limit their influence, et cetera, et cetera. You don't go and be doing stuff like this, allowing them to just keep acquiring. They already have a monopoly on rare earth elements. And to make it to where they have more of a monopoly. But that's the firm that did it. And that is the firm that firm is the firm that kickstarted all of the millions of dollars that went into all of their little shell companies, you know, because they were laundering money. Now, the Rosemont Seneca emails, it was sent, they had those going back and forth between their office and the VP between January 2011 and December 2013. And the White House refused to allow the full release of the emails referencing Hunter Biden's firm because they cited executive privilege. Now, the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, said that they can't release all of them because it would, quote, expose confidential advice between the president and his advisors. Now, Joe Biden wasn't president in 2011 to 2013. He was the vice president. And when did Rosemont Seneca become an official advisor to the vice president? And why would they be advising him? And on what would they be advising him? There are a lot of questions that come from this. What are they advising him on? What does it have to do with government? And then, I mean, what, 2013? It's 2023 now. So this has been 10 years. How in the hell has it been 10 years? And we're just now coming across this stuff. And why is the, why is the archives, why the people who raided Trump, who had a fit and kicked off the raid on Mar-a-Lago, why are they refusing to cooperate here? I got a lot of questions. I'm sure you do as well.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
There's a method to the madness. Biden plans to ask Congress for billions more dollars for another COVID vaccine. With more masks and vaccines, maybe stimulus checks? Americans' wallets can't survive another free money handout. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So a new Titanic expedition is planned, but apparently the U.S. government is saying not so fast because that's our job. Wait. It's accurate. They're trying to stop a planned expedition to recover items of historical. How many items of historical interest are you going to get from this damn ship? They're citing federal law and an international agreement. They treat the shipwreck as a hollow grave site. It's being organized by the Georgia-based firm that owns the salvage rights to the RMS Titanic. They have, I mean, what other artifacts are you going to get? We get it. They had silverware. Ooh. They had, like, clothes. Ooh. And shoes. Ooh. I mean, we get it. I mean, this is getting so tired and exhausted at this point. You're making people uninterested in the Titanic, which is crazy, but that's what all this oversaturation, that's what it's doing. So CGI... an expert is predicting how Hollywood is going to release its first creepy AI film. And because all these AI actors and stuff, they're like, they can basically create people from nothing. There's a special effects artist and animator. He worked at Industrial Light and Magic. That's George Lucas's thing. And so he also worked for The Abyss. And he was saying that there's going to be like, you know, we're going to have entirely AI films. And he's like, you know, and who knows, maybe they'll come up with something and they're not going to tell you even if it's fake. That is actually a very good point. I hate everything. We're smart. Canada warns Alphabet people that in the U.S. you can't travel safely. What is this? This is so stupid. They're saying that people of traveling in the United States, some of the states are their laws are very conservative. They act like they're just stopping random gay people and, you know, pulling them over and asking for their driver's license and also how they have sex. I mean, that's not happening, Canadians. That's not happening. Is this something Trudeau, Castro Jr. put out? I'm curious. Yeah. I'm just curious. We got a lot more on the way, including some 2024 stuff and stupidity. Does it seem like every time you turn around or open up your wallet, you're shocked at the changes that have directly impacted your life in just 2.5 years? There's something that you can do to protect the value of your hard-earned savings and retirement accounts. Contact the folks at American Hartford Gold and talk to them about your options in diversifying your assets. Empower yourself with opportunity. Hold on to the fruits of your hard work and protect your future. So do what I did and call the only precious metal dealers I trust, American Hartford Gold. Diversify your portfolio with physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside of your IRA or 401k. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Happy birthday to Van Morrison, 78 years old. And also the reason I use the word fantabulous is because of him. Dana, last year, the bottom of this first hour, this is like the song about moons, right? So just full disclosure, Kane and I did not sleep well last night. Like, my husband didn't sleep well last night. None of us slept well last night. We came in and we're like, gosh, why is it that we were up tossing and why did we not sleep? And then you're like, it's the damn super blue moon. You said it like Danny DeVito.
I did.
It's you.
That's
you
what it is.
You think it is?
I think that's what it is.
It's the blue moon? Just because what
super
it.
Super blue moon.
Because it was bigger?
The blue moon, I think, is just when the moon arrives.
That's when you have the second moon in a month. So this is the second moon in August, but it's a super moon because it was apparently closer to the Earth than previous full moons.
And that happens once a decade.
Did you turn into a werewolf?
No, I didn't.
Dang. That sucks. See, that would have been really fun.
I didn't even shave this morning, actually. So
you didn't like any extra hair pop out or anything? No. Just, you know.
I was good there. Just didn't sleep.
So you think it was because of the full super blue moon, right?
Yeah.
I'm blaming that. I'm not scientifically sure that that's what it was, but.
See, I feel, because like this is stuff my grandma would say. And some of the stuff that she said, because I'm just like, that sounds witchy. I don't know. I don't think that is the moon. She was also a farmer's almanac person. But I know it affects tides. So I guess, I don't know, maybe it would affect, you know, you. I just, and then so we're talking about it. We're like, Steve, did you have trouble sleeping too? And he's like, no, I slept a full 10 hours. Right. I'm a millennial. The super blue moon doesn't affect me.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Must be nice.
I had a poker game and I had a couple glasses of wine as one does at poker. And then I came home and was tired.
Wait. Whoa. Full stop. Full stop right now. Let's stop at that sentence. One moment, please. We'll get in the meat and taties. Everybody hold up. Steve just said, I had a couple of glasses of wine at poker, as one normally does.
At poker.
The hell kind of bougie poker are you playing at? I mean, we were lucky, Kane, if there was some old beer.
Right.
Someone's dad had beer in the fridge. Right. I mean, and they're having wine with poker. That's,
First of all, y'all fancy. Not they. I had wine. They had beer. I'd buy that like cheap Aldi wine that's like $5, but it's real good. I'm just hooked on it.
Oh, my gosh. You guys are killing me.
All it took was a couple of drinks for him to get a nice 10 hours of sleep while the rest of us were just suffering under the super blue moon.
Yeah, we were like, we were dying. We were just tossing and turning. The moon's getting bigger. And then Steve's just sleeping like a baby. Had a night of poker and a couple glasses of Aldi wine. He's set. Man. Ugh. So they said that this was also supposed to have an effect on what? Like the flood water and the tides and all. I don't know.
And apparently people's moods, too.
Yeah. Is that why everyone was so annoying last night?
Yeah. On Twitter. Yeah. And everywhere else.
You know what's really fun is an election season and a super blue moon.
Oh.
God's like, let's make it interesting. And then he takes a can of jerks and sprinkles it on the whole stew. That's what he does.
The jerk store.
Yeah, he got it from the jerk store. Totally ripping off Gary Larson's Far Side, but you get the idea. But it does seem like that, right? You really gotta, Kane and I, we were totally joking about this. We're like, man, some people deserve to get told. We're trying to be, you know, trying to realize the effects of the super blue moon and combat that by not giving into it. I didn't turn into a werewolf or anything, but man alive. I went outside. It was unnaturally huge. It was very. So that's why I guess we were tossing and turning. I don't know if that makes sense or not. If it doesn't, we'll totally hear about it from some of you who are listening. The others of you are going to be like my grandma and my mom, and you're going to be, oh, well, the farmer's woman. You guys, I know you're going to do it because you always do it every time something like this comes up. Well, your grandmother is right. She was a smart lady. I know. I'm just saying. All right. So coming up later on in the program, we're going to talk with Riley Gaines. She was on Swim Team with a Dude. Remember that? Yeah, the whole Leah Thomas dude. And then we got my friend Maj Ture. He's going to be joining us later on. All right. So just a couple of things here. How far do I want to go into this? So Kane's already dying laughing. Let's start with this. In Arizona, they're getting ready to have a slap fight. I'm going to just if you value your sanity, stay away from that primary. Because it's going to be, apparently Blake Masters and Kari Lake are going to get into a slap fight over who's going to be the Republican nominee for Kyrsten Sinema's seat. Kane, is there another super blue moon coming? If there's three in 1 month, what is that called?
Oh, gosh.
Armageddon?
Not sure. Yeah, I was going to say.
Jeez.
Rapture.
Yeah. So that's because Master says that he's going to run. And apparently Lake said that she's going to run. And this is going to be heinous because they're going to be, it's going to be a giant slap fight. And guess what? Neither of them will win because they're going to take each other out. And Democrats giggle with glee. So I'm just letting you know that's going to happen. Those are the type of primaries you just want to just lay down and take a nap until it sorts itself out. You know what I mean? That's just one of those things. Now, meanwhile, this is what Democrats are getting ready to do. I don't know if you've seen some of these. They've been in some cities already. Democrats are buying these like major highway signs. And they're trying to play on dark Brandon, which I'm so tired. Democrats cannot meme because you have to have a sense of irony and you have to be able to make a joke at your own expense, neither of which these people can do. They fact check satire. Spare me. So they have dark Brandon and it says, "Get real, Jack. I'm bringing Roe back." And it's their abortion billboards that they're putting up all over, you know, in a number of different states. So there's a $25 million ad campaign that's targeting 7 swing states: Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And they're leaning heavily into it because Republicans can't get their stuff together. Nothing is more frustrating than watching people fight on abortion messaging. And then watching people who, I think everybody has good intent, but insisting that because you're not going their way, then you apparently want to kill babies. And that's, it comes down to a difference in strategy. And Republicans are afraid to talk about it because you have people on the right that will hit them. And then people on the left will use them as campaign fodder. And one of the reasons why there was, you know, was in Wisconsin, the Supreme Court, some of the stuff the last election that they had during midterms, that was apparently one of the issues that Republicans underperformed on. And it's when you can, which I don't understand, especially when you consider the national consensus of 15 weeks, that's where everyone, Democrats and Republicans, tend to fall. But the problem is that Republicans are so terrified to have a clear message on this because they don't want to get hit from, you know, people like the Susan B. Anthony organization. They don't want to get made into like an avatar for a Democrat campaign. That's what they're trying to do with DeSantis. So it's, you know, and they asked it as a question at the primary, the first primary debate, and the candidates kind of awkwardly answered it. I think there were a couple that sort of answered it. They affirmed, you know, I believe in life for themselves. The media wants some Republicans saying, yes, I will do this federally, so that they can undercut the arguments that Republicans made in the wake of Roe before midterm. Because remember, Democrats were trying to, it happened before midterms, they were trying to use that as a way to suggest that, oh, well, now Republicans are going to rewrite some sort of federal decree on abortion. And Republicans were saying, no, this is something that the states are going to do. And then Lindsey Graham came out, you know, 2 days before with his own proposal. Now, there's a lot of back and forth argument as to the language in the Constitution as to, you know, what the legalese of it, because, you know, particularly as it says, you know, a citizen, etc. There's a lot of my lawyer friends actually argue back and forth on this. But I think ultimately Republicans are trying to avoid being the cause of torpedoing Republicans' chances by allowing themselves to be used as like the representation of, oh, here's Republicans going to do this at the national level again. Now, I also agree that if you believe that, you know, people out there who believe in life and they think that abortion is murder, that for them, that's an unacceptable argument. And the discussion, the legalese discussion about constitutional rights and all this, nobody has a constitutional right to abortion. The 14th Amendment is what everybody's kind of focusing on, because it talks about persons born or naturalized. And the legal focus is on the first part of that sentence, persons born. And so you have even pro-life people that are arguing between themselves as to the best way to strategize about this because of that because of that section one of the 14th Amendment, all persons born. Now, I'm not opposed to, you know, people trying to amend that, saying persons born or unborn. You know, that's one thing. But I mean, it says what it says, and it does, and acknowledging that doesn't make you pro-abortion. It just means you've got to be really smart about how you strategize about this. So to let you know, Democrats, they're taking advantage of this because this is a Republican weakness. And Republicans aren't weak on life. They just suck at messaging. So this is what Democrats are going to seize on. And I'm telling you, it did work in a couple of states for them. That's not a lie. It worked very well. Where it didn't work well for them was Florida. Think about this. Florida went for a 15-week and then they had a 6-week ban. You had non-traditional Republican voters that were supporting Republicans in spite of that. And even that, because Republicans in Florida and the governor there, they were messaging, look, when you look at how many abortions are given, and every state makes exceptions for the life of the mother. They have exceptions for life of the mother and what is it like? Where it's rape and things like that. There's to sit here and to act like any kind of emergency situation isn't going to be considered is disingenuous. I mean, they're lying to you. But in Florida, they had a 6-week. The governor signed that. There were Democrats that were supportive of that. In fact, it's still happening because Republicans are, I think it's approaching 3-1. They are out registering Republican voters over Democrats. Right now it's 2-1. Still, even in the wake of that. But they're also being honest about, look, here are the statistics about abortion. 99.9% of it is used as birth control. Less than 0.1% are actually in cases of rape or incest. And this argument that, oh, it's for the life of the mother. No, a woman, first off, it's not even going to get that far. They're not going to be going to Planned Parenthood. They're going to be under the care of their OB. So that's a stupid, specious argument. The messaging that they had on that in Florida has been very successful. I just don't know why Republicans are afraid to be that forthright in their states and in their campaigns, or why the Republican Party isn't. Of course, I just think we have bad leadership in the RNC. But, you know, I wasn't the one that endorsed the chair. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this show, which is why I'm proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you're getting the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, military veterans, and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT and get free activation when you use offer code Dana. Join me and make the switch today. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I didn't know anything like that, but lightning struck my house. We had to be out of that house for about 7 months while it was repaired because so much damage was done to the house and half the house almost collapsed.
Why does he keep doing this? You guys saw the article 2 weeks ago where his people were like, stop doing this. Did they tell him to stop lying about this story? He had a grease fire in his kitchen. The firefighters had it out in like 15 minutes because his wife can't cook, apparently. So I said that. Yeah. That is not the same thing as wildfires in Maui burning hundreds of people with hundreds still missing. And then he tried to compare it to what's happening in Florida. Never has one instance of your wife not being able to cook a meal gotten so much mileage. Yeah, I had a kitchen fire and oh my gosh. He cannot empathize. Now, there's a nuance here. Some people are saying, well, he's trying to make it all about him. I don't think he's trying to make it all about him. I think that he is incapable of empathizing with other people. He is so privileged. I can't believe I'm using that word, but he is. He has no idea how to empathize with people. None. And that's what he thinks it is this kind of stupid stuff. He has no touch point with anybody, cultural or otherwise. It's just this. And it sounds so bad. You don't have to have a similar story in order to understand how much it must suck to have your town burned down, right? You don't have to say, well, I kind of know what it's like. I had a kitchen fire. No, you don't know what it's like, dude. Not even the same. Stop. That not even remotely the same. You can empathize with people and say, I am so sorry this happened. This is horrible. What can I do to help? Did you see, by the way, the photo of him and who was it? Some FEMA people. They were in some meeting room watching three different screens, and apparently they were meeting about federal response, which is like the first time that I saw them having a meeting about federal response as soon as it came out that House Oversight wanted to investigate said federal or absence thereof response. And I just wondered if he knew what he was watching. What show is this? What happened to Magnum's house? I just wondered if that's, you know, if he was aware. It just seemed a little bit too little too late. Really did. Coming up in our second hour, we got a number of things coming up for you. We got to get into some culture stuff. We're going to talk. The House is coming back into session tomorrow. Slap fight returns. I'm so excited. And then also we got some cultural stuff too. Canada's warning the alphabet people to not travel to the U.S. I have no idea why. Because it's they're trying to scaremonger. The parents are making some inroads as it relates to talking to kids about gender in school. We also have Riley Gaines is going to be joining us. Maj Touré joins us in our second hour. He is the founder of Black Guns Matter. He was like right out there after the dollar store tragedy in Jacksonville, making sure that people knew that they had the right and the ability to not be soft targets. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that because it always seems like that goes undiscussed every single time that this happens. And I would just think that if there is any demo that is at risk, those are the people that you want to be able to defend themselves. You know what I mean? We're going to get into all of that and more. We got Florida Man coming up, too. I got a good Florida Man for you. Stick with us. Second hour on the way.
The reason it's more valuable is because we've wrongfully cut off Russia from the West by bombing the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines and also sanctioning Russia. So if we can reopen the Western economic relations with Russia, Russia has less of a reason to be in partnership with China. There are also cracks in the armor of that relationship, Jesse, if you look closely. Russia actually sent weapons both to India and to Vietnam, both of which border China. They're sending a signal. China wants to build a railroad in northeast China to get to the ocean. Russia won't let them. So there are cracks.
I've known Jesse for 15 years. His expression, his inner monologue, I wish was mic'd. Holy cow. Jeez. Kane, this is like one of those things where you need to grab a railing somewhere and just. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. It didn't start out this way. You know, it really didn't. I mean, we started out with all the hopes in the world, right? I like to have a healthy bench. But you got to weed it. You know what I'm saying? You do. So that's Vivek Ramaswamy talking who knows what the hell on Jesse's program last night. So we wrongfully cut off Russia because we bombed Nord Stream. What? I missed that memo. I mean, what is that? I think he has no idea about foreign policy. And that's not me being mean. He just doesn't. Like, I don't know anything about football. You want to hear the funniest thing in the world is if you forced me to do commentary for a football game. Oh my gosh. My husband gets so frustrated with me trying to explain how football happens. I mean, I know I'm in Texas. I'm not going to pretend that I love it just to fit some conservative female stereotype. I just don't know what the hell's going on. They fall down, they get up, they scoot a little bit. Steve's dying. But it is like him talking about foreign policy. It's kind of the same thing. Or hearing Joe Biden talk about guns. It's the same thing. Do you realize that Russia, with Nord Stream, they were trying to cut off the West. But furthermore, they were actually trying to cut off Europe. I love how he goes in with this presupposition that Russia is just offering this gas through Nord Stream out of the kindness of its little Soviet heart. They just, you know, just want to, they want to offer some gas. Yeah, that's great. They actually want to use it as leverage. Welcome back to the program. This is top of our second hour. Dana Lash with you. Listen coast to coast. Stream it. Find the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, and Facebook. That's the big problem that I have with whenever he talks about foreign policy. And he thinks that if I just talk with my hands and I over-enunciate my words and I come off as very energetic, that you are going to be so wowed by my delivery that you won't question what the hell I'm saying. It's kind of, it's that's not going to work, because the stuff that he's saying is just crazy. It's crazy. Acting like, well, if the United States just works with Russia, then they're not going to seek any kind of partnership with China. What kind of remedial understanding of that whole dynamic is this? Because that's I mean, inaccurate, and it's just crude in its, I think, sophistication. It's just not a good, it's just dumb. He doesn't understand what's happening here. Yet Russia has been wanting to use oil and gas as a weapon against Europe for quite some time. I mean, look at Germany with Nord Stream. Look at Ukraine. I mean, before they were doing Nord Stream 2, Ukraine was essentially part of their energy infrastructure, because they had, through pipelines, they had gas that was going through Ukraine. I mean, obviously, you can't do anything in Ukraine unless you're going to jeopardize part of your energy infrastructure. So they were tied a little bit. This is one of the reasons why they wanted to bypass Ukraine entirely with delivery of gas to Europe. And also, this is one of the reasons why previous administration wanted to make sure that we could, you know, maybe fill that gap a little ourselves. Wouldn't it be better to get nice American gas instead of dirty Russian gas and be able to offer that to Europe so that they could be a little bit more independent? We don't have any kind of, we don't want to manipulate them into acting in a way that best advantages us. But Russia absolutely will. And they've done it. I mean, they've already done it several times. I mean, I don't know how you can speak about these issues and be entirely unaware of this dynamic. This is the stuff that I'm talking about. I saw some stupid commentary. Somebody had said, this is the military-industrial complex that's going after Vivek Ramaswamy. First off, I think if anyone is saying that in this context, they need to go back to school and learn what military-industrial complex means, especially if they were most recently a Democrat back in 2016 doing oppo on conservatives. That's number one. Number two, that's not even what the military-industrial complex is. It's literally trying to prevent stuff like that by not doing stupid maneuvers that actually provoke any sort of increased aggression. You want your allies to be energy independent. You don't want them to be dependent upon any kind of geopolitical foe, even if Russia is, you know, rotting away at this point. Essentially, they are. But this idea that if we just offer them something better than what China's offering them, they're going to accept it. No, that's not going to happen. And that's not even their aim either. So this, I think the partnership that Russia has with China, China realizes that Russia's sort of its second banana. So it's like an old, you know, like you have talk show host and like Conan O'Brien, Andy's his second banana. You have your host and then you have like your sidekick. Like with when it was Johnny Carson, it was Ed McMahon, the publisher's clearinghouse guy. It was Ed McMahon. So that's how they view this relationship. And I think Russia has come to terms with the fact that it is not any kind of powerhouse in that region as it maybe perhaps used to be. They're overtaken by China at this point. And so they want to find a steady ally in which they have some, you know, they have some a little bit of like-minded things. They're more frenemies, I think, than they are allies. So don't misunderstand that relationship. But they're definitely, obviously, way more civil than they are with the United States. But I just think that his understanding of this is goofy. And then to say, well, we wrongfully cut off Russia by what in the world? Where are you getting this from? This is just silly. And this is why people are criticizing it. And I'm so tired of seeing other people, when they raise objections to this, be criticized like they're some kind. I mean, like they're a neocon or something. And again, I don't think people even understand that phrase. It's not neocon to say maybe you should understand what the hell you're talking about before you talk about it. How in the hell is that neocon? How is that military-industrial complex to expect that people who enter this discussion at this particular level just have a basic understanding of whatever in the hell they're talking about? Because if we're going to redefine words like the left does with man and woman, let me know so I can like leave this little political party or whatever it's become. We're not redefining words and terms here. This is frustrating. It's frustrating to me. Politics doesn't have to be personal. As a politician, I do not like him. I told you I think he's a stalking horse for Big Pharma. I don't have any clue why he's on the Republican stage. I don't know why anyone that would call themselves as a conservative celebrates somebody that's pushing a 59% death tax or was trying to make money off of literally surveilling you with a COVID digital vax pass. That happened. Or is still making money with CCP investments. Or is suing for IP in mRNA tech. Still has a stake in that company and only stepped down in February, right before a run. Super convenient. Never donated to a Republican except twice when I pulled up the entire donation history. Thousands of dollars gone to Democrats and only really ever started talking about Republicans in 2020. But yes, let's go ahead and act like he's, you know, the next messiah of the conservative movement. Jeez. You can see why people get frustrated. I get frustrated with this. And I'll say it again, and I'm going to move on here. I think if you're not hearing this anywhere else, you need to question why the other people that you are watching or listen to lack the courage to tell you this stuff or don't have enough respect for you to tell you this. It's one of the two, if not both. Now, moving on. Can we stop this? This is a cultural thing that I also see coming up with some of this. There's a difference between celebrating one's country and then being so nationalist that you become left. And I wanted to point this out really quickly because I'm keeping this in mind. What were we talking about last hour? How Democrats, they just dropped $25 million for abortion messaging in the 7 swing states. So some people in the Republican Party think that proposals like this, and I think that's why they talk about it so much, might be a good way to counter it. And I cannot tell you how many times I've had discussions with people on the right. So everyone always cites Hungary. Hungary is offering new moms 0% income tax for life to help boost their nation's birth rate. This is Orban. He's the Viktor Orban. He's the prime minister. They've been promoting these new policies. They say it's family friendly. And they say that women who become mothers before turning 30 are exempt from paying a personal income tax. And they were also if you have X amount of kids, you get a minivan or something like that. This is a big government problem or a big government response. And the reason I bring this up is because I hope that we are not going to flirt around with this idea that big government is good after all because of stuff like this. Right? Because it's still big government. Why do I feel like the Natalie Portman Anakin meme from Star Wars? We're not going to do big government stuff, right? We're not going to do big government stuff. I feel like that right now. But it is. Tell me if I'm wrong, Kane. This is big government.
It is big government.
And only, these amount of people don't get to pay the income tax. It's a big government solution to this. This is not, just because Hungary's doing it doesn't mean the United States has to emulate it. And obviously they have a very different history and some other issues that we do not have in the United States. They've had economic crises because of their declining birth rates, et cetera, et cetera. And so they said that, and the U.S. U.S. Congressional Budget Office predicted that deaths are going to exceed births in America by 2043 as fertility rates decline. And also, you still have abortion. But the thing is that I don't think that this is the way to remedy that. I mean, it's a big government solution. How about this? How about no income tax? How about government out of the way of business so that the market can be healthy and self-sustaining, so that moms don't have to depend on the pimp that is Uncle Sam. And make no mistake, you can put whatever, you know, stars and stripes or whatever you want on this version of this policy in the United States, but it's still pimping. And try to act like this is like a conservative or a Republican solution to a problem that can simply be solved by getting government out of the private sector and stop penalizing people with ridiculous income tax, which is unconstitutional. Here's how you test if people are serious about this. If you hear other Republicans or conservatives talk about these similar policies, ask them, are you willing to totally and fully abolish the IRS? Are you willing to abolish all property tax? If they say no to either of those things, they're fake. Just saying. It's true. It starts there. We got a lot more on the way. I had to touch on that because it's kind of shocking to me. I mean, people don't see that it's you don't sit here and rail against big government and then go to big government to solve your problem. That's literally how that's welfare. And how well is that working in the United States? This is welfare. Because we're doing such a good job with it here already. Mind blowing.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the opioid overdose antidote Narcan will be available over the counter as a nose spray in the coming days, making it the first treatment of its kind available to the public without prescription. The manufacturer Emergent BioSolutions announced the first batch of the nasal spray has officially shipped to leading drugstores, pharmacies, groceries, and online retailers. The suggested price for the two-dose package is $44.99. They're going to have it at like CV. That says something when you have to have how prevalent opioids are, that you have to have something over the counter like this. This got over the counter faster than birth control. Just saying. Thanks, Democrats, for twice defeating that Republican bill. Superman star Henry Cavill is set to star in the reboot. This is going to be very controversial for some of you, of The Highlander. They're rebooting The Highlander with Henry Cavill. So are you, remember, it began in 86, starred Christopher Lambert, and then it had a TV series. I mean, he was a good Highlander. Henry Cavill, I think, is going to be a good Highlander. I like the first season of The Witcher. But I think he'll be a good Highlander. I'll say. Let's see. Voice deepfakes are coming for your bank balance, apparently. Golly. Always have a safe word, like with everything. Always have a safe word with everything, because that's one thing that AI won't be able to actually know. But there are all of these stories of these people talking about, like, it was people calling their parents, acting like the kids, saying that they were in trouble. Now there's this story coming out where this investor called his local bank to discuss a big money transfer, and then he called again, except the second call wasn't from him. It was a software program that generated his voice with AI to trick the banker. So it's a new scam attempt that is got the attention of cybersecurity experts. So, yeah, just, you know, fantastic. Let's see. 11 were taken to the hospital after a Delta jetliner hit turbulence near an Atlanta airport. They were okay, but it was left Milan. It was about 40 miles northeast of Atlanta's international airport when they hit severe turbulence. It did land safely. They were taken to the hospital, carried 151 passengers. But they said that they were rebooking and making sure that other people could get to their destinations. Our friend Maj Toure, founder of Black Guns Matter, joins us next. Stay with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon here. You can listen coast to coast in a terrestrial market near you. You can stream the radio program. Watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. So after Jacksonville happened, one of the things that we, you know, we always see is this horrific tragedy. People are in mourning. And with all of this death and grievance and uncertainty and everything else, you have politicians immediately, predictable, like clockwork. They run in, they try to politicize, try to use it as a tool of division, say a bunch of stuff that's not true, get everybody riled up, and then they leave. And they don't actually do anything. They keep saying, oh, we got to do something, we have to do something. They never do anything, though. They never actually do anything positive that is worthwhile to implement any kind of change. And then I was just on Twitter and I was scrolling through my friend Maj Toure. was immediately on social media saying, quote, in light of the tragic killings yesterday, we are here in Jacksonville to assist any and all community members who want to learn how to defend themselves. We're giving a free firearms basic and safety class tonight. And they were there. Then they were there giving the class and getting people educated as to what their rights are, what they can do, getting them familiar with firearms and building up their confidence so that, heaven forbid, if they're faced with that kind of evil, they're not a soft target and they can push back. Joining us now via Skype, my friend Maj Ture of Black Guns Matter and the Solutionary Lifestyle. Maj, always good to see you. Thanks for joining us, my friend. Thanks for what you do, too.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I haven't talked to you in a minute.
I know. It's been a while. You were immediately responding to this. And you guys were down there within, like, what, 24 hours, 48 hours?
We were there when the shooting happened. We were there. I was at the, forget the name of the armory, but there was a gun show. And I like to get old stuff at gun shows. And you know, I'm in the RV now. We go to all of these places already.
Yeah.
And so a few friend of mine's over at Waft and places in Orlando. I like to do some scenario training. So I'm like, okay, let's hang out in Miami, but let's go from the top to the bottom of Florida. And we were in Jacksonville for that gun show. And then I heard about it and I said, I got with some libertarian folks over there. Huge shouts to the Libertarian Party of Duval County. They galvanized. We went to Lonnie C. Miller Park. We did it outside. We galvanized the community. We did a little bit of Stop the Bleed and a little bit of basic firearms training. But I would be an absolute coward to be there and not lend energy to the people of that community. And so we went over to the vigil first, which was, I think, about 5:30 in the evening. You know, politicians were there, prayers, which are good. Prayers and all of that stuff is great. It's good for resolve. But they're also, you know, faith without works is dead. Amen. And so we, in essence, did that. And it turned out really, really good.
And that brings a confidence to people, I think. I mean, I was reading, Maj, how, talking with our friend Maj Ture of Black Guns Matter, I was reading how this disgusting bigot went and was targeting. He actually targeted a historically black college first and met with, I saw that there was armed security there, realized, I'm gonna meet some resistance, left, and then chose a soft target. That makes me so sick and of course, you know, people, you know, they go to dollar store. They're not anticipating evil coming like this happening today. I mean, you have to always be, you know, kind of aware. But yeah, that was so sickening to me. And that, you know, they're picking a soft target, trying to find where good people are more vulnerable. And I mean, and that's really, I like how you approach this. How do you approach that with people, knowing that it seems like, you know, evil's more prevalent in the world today, or at least it's coddled more in the world today? How do you approach, especially in light of these kinds of tragedies, instructing people to give them confidence and not playing into that fear?
We lean in with empathy first. When we go to a vigil, we're not having a conversation about firearms just yet. We're here to help the community deal with this trauma. We're talking about three people that will never see their family, or their families will never see them again. So when we go to a vigil, which is an important part of healing, I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
We're there to make sure that this community heals. So that's first. And then we met some, basically, I wasn't even going to do outreach at the vigil. Certain law enforcement officers recognized who I was and said, you're here. How can we help? And some of those officers, one of the first things that they said to some of the community members as well, they said, man, as soon as the call came, all we in the precinct thought about was, man, I wish there was somebody there armed. And so when the community hears that, knowing that those law enforcement officers are there, they're communicating with me, not just because it's me, but they're like, oh, okay, this guy's a firearms instructor. He came here to support, and law enforcement is in alignment with that. They listen a little bit more, but you have to lead in with empathy. Me just going there saying, everybody there should have been armed.
Right.
I'd be politicizing. And so we always, that's the three steps to our solutionary lifestyle. First, empathy. Second is facts. And then third, we come up with this solution together. And fortunately, some of those community members came out to Lonnie C. Miller Park, and we were able to present some solutions around basic Stop the Bleed as well as basic firearms together. And And that approach is pretty much undefeated.
Yeah, and you had a lot of people that came out from some of the photos I saw. A lot of people turned up.
Yeah. The problem is, I like that that many people showed up. I don't like that it was because of a tragedy.
Right.
I want everybody listening to understand preparation means beforehand. And you need to, I'm literally in the RV and in a Cracker Barrel, right? I am armed. I have four first aid kits at arm's length. And it's not just about defending life against these weirdos. A car accident, Cracker Barrels are not too far from the highway, right? A car accident may happen. I need to take a stop the bleed class. I need a CPR class. If you're from urban America, you know the whole thing, like urban Americans, we don't really swim like that, right? If you don't swim, what happens if your child falls in a pool and you can't do anything? I just want to urge everyone to deal with these things ahead of time and be prepared. Your head on a swivel, we're not being paranoid. Mm. We're being prepared. And I think that most people that showed up, unfortunately, because of this tragedy, they will never be looking at these scenarios the same again. They're going to be walking around in condition yellow, just kind of like paying attention, making sure that things are good, but having the tools and the skill set to make sure that they can defend life or protect life if need be.
One of the things, talking with our friend Maj Touré, Black Lives Matter, one of the things that I always notice is that, you know, the work that you do, I mean, you've never been given a CNN segment, no MSNBC segment, nothing like that, right?
No.
It's too positive. They can't focus on the positive.
I think here's the thing. Americans, and I'm going to be a bit cavalier here. Americans, we have become very, very comfortable with what we have. And I'm not saying that people should be ashamed of if they've worked hard and they've made a great life for themselves. I think that if you're not very, very careful, if you don't have a solid spiritual grounding and you're not letting that guide you, it can be very easy for us to forget how much we have in comparison to the rest of the world. And so because of that, you know, when an emergency happens, people want to jump up to the thing. But when we've been doing this work, my very first interview was with you. We've been doing this work for years. And then people start buying guns, but they think the gun is a talisman. And then media a lot of times says, well, you know, black gun sales are up, but who's, you know, that's not really a big deal. The problem is, we don't get behind the things that are very important until it's almost like after the fact, or maybe sometimes, unfortunately, too late. I remember this real briefly. I remember all of my anti-gun friends, because I have a lot of anti-gun friends. I live in Philly. And so I've maintained the ability to not destroy the relationship, even though they're crazy walking around with no means to defend them, right? And so when in 2020, when the Philadelphia pretty much said, we're going to close the grocery stores. No. I got so many phone calls from dudes that was like, yo, bro, you told me to get a gun. I did, but I don't got no ammo. I was doing backdoor deals, giving guys 9mm, like, yo, you ain't get it from me. Like, these were drug deals. My point in saying this is, I want our people to understand that the funding, the attention, and the support for our work, all of the classes are free. They're free to all because of voluntary donations. It is very difficult to fundraise while doing this work and being able to galvanize at a moment's notice. And so I just would challenge everybody that's listening, if you hear something on this call today or this viewership today that you're like, hey, that's a great idea. I literally know how many donors we need to finish this. I'm trying to get done with fundraising for the whole month of September. We need 2,928 more donors, 2928, at the $100 level to solve all of our fundraising, and we want to do that for the remainder of the year. Now, again, basic firearms classes, obviously. Stop the bleed classes, obviously. When you leave our stop the bleed classes, you get a practice tourniquet, the cheap ones that you shouldn't buy for real tourniquet action for practice, as well as a real one. You leave with those. Our yoga classes, our civics classes, our phlebotomy classes, all of the things that we do at the Solutionary Center and abroad are because of voluntary donations. We will have enough once we hit this goal to buy the building outright, as well as get a whole year of classes paid for in advance. Saying this to say, no, I don't anticipate CNN necessarily highlighting that, because this solves crime. You create more safe and responsible firearms owners, you create more people that are not looking for trouble. And the guys that are looking for trouble, all of a sudden, they're not looking for trouble anymore. That's bad for leftist jail situations.
Yes.
They want crime. They want crime. Crime pays the system. And so if anyone knows that that's true about CNN and extreme leftist policies and politics and media outlets, looking at you guys, Legacy Media, but maybe not. But if you guys know that this is important and it, what I'm saying is accurate, please take a minute to donate, guys. We've given away hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years to make these classes continue. And we want to seal it out within September. So if we can get 2,928 people to donate $100, we get there, and we would love to do that for the month of September and get this part out of the way.
Talking with our friend Maj Trey, I think this is what you're doing is just like the essence of America. It is literally what the founders envisioned for how people should solve problems, not just, you know, in their own communities, but nationally as well. People helping people. They see a need, they fill a need, they go and serve, even if they didn't necessarily plan to, because I know that you came into this very organically. Even if they didn't necessarily plan to do it, you know, and that's, I think, what leadership is. You know, maybe not the people who are seeking it, but they see that there's this people need help, and you step up into it. I mean, that is the essence of what America is what you're doing. Where can people go to donate?
Everybody can go to Give, Send, Go. We were on that other fundraising.
Yeah, and they were kicking you off, weren't they?
Yeah. No, they were stealing money and saying the truckers in the convoy over in Canada said we raised $8 million. Remember that?
Yes.
Truckers convoy, and they were going to communize it, socialize it. So we got off of that platform willingly, and we switched over to givesendgo.com /solutionary. That's givesendgo.com/solutionary. Because one, you can make a donate. That's a Christian-based organization. They don't take a percentage. You can choose to donate a dollar if you want to. So that's been a great platform for us. Huge shout out to the folks at GiveSendGo. But anyone that wants to support, guys, we need 2,928 donors.
Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. Because, I mean, I just feel like I think what you're doing, I'm going to be very, very honest. I think what you're doing in some ways is more impactful than any other organization that's out there and actually gets right to the heart of the problem and fixes it right at the heart of the problem instead of going through multi-layers of administration and all of that nonsense. It gets right to the heart of it. Maj, God bless you for what you're doing. Let's make this happen. We're going to get that link out there, and I want to check in with you as well, and I want to get, like, we'll chart the progress and see, like, what else is needed as we go into fall, because, I mean, this is the answer. What you're doing is the answer, and I don't know, maybe Netflix will call you up. Maybe they'll do, like, a documentary or something. I just feel like that's, you know, that needs to happen. More people need to see this. Maj Trey, always appreciate what you do, my friend. God bless you. You're an actual patriot, not just one who says they are. Appreciate what you do. Stay in touch.
Thank you. Peace, y'all.
Of course. We got more to come, folks, as we wrap up this second hour of the program. We got Florida Man on the way as well. We're going to put that. I'm going to send out a newsletter with that link for real. Like, I think donate if you can, because every little bit helps. And this is like one of the most American response. I mean, this is exactly what it is to be a patriot in this country.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
A 67-year-old Florida man decided to rob a bank to get rent money. That's kind of sad in a way, isn't it? 67-year-old Michael Noonan tried his hand at bank robbery because he wanted to just cover his rent. And he went to a Bank of America in Hollywood, Florida to try to get $650. He slid a brown plastic bag to the teller saying he had a gun and she should put cash in it. And she did nothing. She just stood there and stared at him. And then he reiterated, you know, he like indicated he had a gun. The teller squinted with disbelief, saw no gun, locked up her cash drawer, and then pushed the emergency alarm for good measure. So he tried to make an exit, but he was wearing a very brightly colored bird shirt, and that made him very recognizable. And so he just needed rent money. That's all he needed. And he got in federal custody, though. You can't do that. You can't commit a crime. Gosh, I mean, it's sad, but at the same time, like, what? Wouldn't it be easier maybe to panhandle than that? I don't know. I mean, I feel bad for the dude, but they need a rent money, maybe? I mean, if you're taking it at face value. I mean, that's a really loud shirt. He's got sailboats and birds on it. Just saying. A sea cow, manatee, spotted grazing on a lawn in Florida after the hurricane passed. I mean, literally on someone's lawn. This manatee took full advantage of a Florida man's flooded lawn after Hurricane Idalia tore through. In a video taken by David Eisenhower of Port Charlotte, a manatee was eating the grass on his lawn. And you can just hear the people in the background. He's eating the grass. That is unbelievable. They're saying it over and over again in the video. It's funny. But it actually is kind of crazy. You can't touch it or do nothing. But it was that flooded. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, they probably could have waded in there like waist deep. And they could just saw that manatee in there just eating up the grass. All kinds of stuff. Crazy stuff happens when these hurricanes come in. This accused thief said that he was not good at shoplifting. That was his defense. He tried to steal a bicycle pump lock and inner tube, the 53-year-old. And when store security spotted him and alerted local authorities, he finally made this statement, "I'm not good at shoplifting." Clearly, he was immediately arrested. Stick with us, third hour next.
The critical needs assistance that was provided to those in Maui, $700 in payments to individuals there, given the cost of living in Hawaii, specifically in the Lahaina community. Is anything being done right now? Are there considerations or efforts being made to try to raise that cap, that $700 figure for those who are there?
Yeah, the $700 figure of critical needs assistance is really just that amount of funding for some of the very immediate needs that individuals have. Every year, the main part of our assistance, which is our individual and household program, adjusts annually based on inflation. This year, it's $41,000 of a cap that individuals can get. That will get raised after the fiscal year. I don't know what that number is yet, but we do adjust that main portion of the funding that goes to individuals annually based on inflation.
So that's the FEMA head there saying, no, you just get the $70 or $700. That's all you get. That's it. If you want more, you got to go to Ukraine. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash with you, your lovable curmudgeon, top of this third hour. Listen across the country. You can listen to watch the simulcast as well. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. They get $700 one-time payment, which basically they don't get because, remember, due to inflation, thanks to Binomics, it's actually $709 that American families are paying extra for
per month.
So that's just 1 month of the paying extra stuff for them. Good job, Biden. Yay. Yeah, good job. $700 a month. But hey, the pulling my story up here. They were sending a new package to Ukraine. True. That's a true thing. That was something that the White House recently they were pushing. Because like how much, like I mean how many billions, hundreds of billions at this point that we've spent? You gotta be in Ukraine if you want that sweet, sweet taxpayer money nonstop. You got to be there. Can't be in Maui. You can't be there. You got to go to Ukraine to have it done. That I find that is so ludicrous. He could successfully flip that state. That'd be something else too, wouldn't it? I just don't know how people see the impact of certain policies and how that relates to how things are handled in their own state, especially in the face of, you know, a horrific, you know, natural disaster like this. They've kind of blotted them out of the press, haven't they? Mm-hmm. Have there been any more updates on recovery efforts for people who are missing?
Nope.
None.
None that I've seen.
You'd think that the White House would want to have a regular press conference on it, or that Corinne Jean-Pierre, if she was asked about it, that she would actually, you know, be able to answer. She can't. This is audio soundbite 3. This is pretty much, I don't know what he's saying here. audio. What is this? Was his remark? He just kind of went off script a little bit, I think. This was President Daddy Showers McUnity. Listen.
You're talking about huge numbers of Americans suddenly not having power because the company makes a determination that...
Well, but by the way, we also know how many huge number of Americans have died, how many huge number of Americans have, for example, more forest has been burned to the ground since I've become, in the time I've been doing this, than the entire square miles of the state of Maryland. Imagine the entire state of Maryland burning to the ground. That's how much is already burned to the ground. So I think as we try to harden the capacity to transmit energy, it's not irrational to make a judgment that you may have to, in a certain circumstance, shut off the power. I just don't know enough to know the detail of how to do that. I mean, where that decision is made. That's why we're starting off. I was talking with Ms. Sherwood Randall, who handles this for me, about the need to put these meters along these so we know where the power is going down. You may be able to shut off parts. I just don't know enough to know that.
I've got some questions. Do you got questions? Because I got questions. What is he talking about? I mean, the transcript is even hard to follow. How many huge number of Americans have, for example, more forests burn to the ground, such as maps, such as, oh man, in the time I've been doing this, I have no idea what to say there. I don't know. But I think it is, I think it's sad, and it has nothing to do with climate change. It has to do with bad, we've talked about this, bad forest management. The Florida hurricane story, it's interesting. They notice how they're treating Florida specifically like a local story. They really wanted there to be, I think the media really wanted there to be something bad so that they could say, look at Ron DeSantis. They were probably like trying to send camera crews around to find someone who was standing on, you know, in some water saying DeSantis abandoned us or something. I was waiting for anything like that because they mostly now it's just a local story. They learned after the last hurricane, Ian, that, oh, well, maybe stuff gets done. So we shouldn't spend our resources out here trying to cobble something together out of nothing. There's no way for them to report on the response to the hurricane. I hate saying it like this because it's just the man doing his damn job, right? I mean, I'm not trying to make it political. It's the way that the press covers this stuff that makes it political. He's just doing his damn job that he was elected to do. And heaven forbid the media report on how quickly the power is coming back on or how quickly bridges are being rebuilt or structure problems due to the hurricane and all of this stuff and the water is being remedied or treated, etc. Because heaven forbid they make him look good. If it makes you look good, they won't report on it, even if it's just you doing your job that you were supposed to do. You know, that's kind of part of what the press is supposed to do as well. Tell you of government misbehavior and also tell you when government's doing something right. But now they've treated it like this local story. Also, someone please, I'm trying to figure this out. Guys, what in the world? I didn't think it was true. And then I went and was looking it up. I don't know why. I don't know why he's doing this. Why? I saw this on Twitter. So apparently, I don't think the previous POTUS is happy over the hurricane stuff. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know. It first was over at Mediaite. And it said the headline was Trump lashes out at DeSantis. As he manages hurricane, what a shame for Florida. And so he's trying to say that he's doing a bad job. And he hits him on insurance and then electricity and then says his campaign numbers have crashed. What a shame for Florida. Ooh, what are you doing? Why is he doing this? I went and looked at his platform and that he put it out there. I don't know why. If he is upset that, and again, this goes to exactly what the media was just doing. if he's doing his job and it's making news because Florida's a big state and this is was a, I mean, the way that this hurricane was coming in, the strength and where precisely it was hitting made it unusual, which makes news because it was historical. First time it hit there in a century. That's just news. And that's just the way things are. I don't know why he feels that slamming that is helpful to him, because it just makes people look at what DeSantis is doing. If I were advising him, I would say, don't say anything about it. Because now you're going to have people look at DeSantis and they're going to see how no one's complaining and how they were ready to go. And then they're going to ask you, why the hell are you criticizing him for this? Why does he do this? This is why you have to have good advisors stop you from doing these things. Why? Why is he doing this? It's kind of like how the media is covering this. Speaking of media, by the way, just a FYI. So I was looking into this. I am always very suspicious of political action committees. Years ago, and this was probably like 10 years ago, there was, or eight maybe, there was some weird pack. It was like some conservative pack that was sending emails out fundraising and literally trying to use my name. And someone forwarded me something that they were sending out and I lawyered up and rained hell. And that got dropped pretty quick. And you got to be careful of what they call them, scam packs. There are a lot of these packs that are created that don't actually help candidates and they'll keep the money for themselves and they enrich themselves off of it. I mean, that's a whole grift in DC. There are a lot of people who get a lot of money doing this stuff. You'd be shocked. It's a whole thing. And so that's why you got to be very, very selective and really vet these packs. And I remember hearing there was this one pack that came out and it was called Ron to the Rescue. And it sounded totally scammy to me. It sounded scammy and it didn't, I don't know what they were actually doing to try to help the campaign or anything like that. So apparently they decided to close up shop and the media is trying to portray this as though this is a major negative for Ron DeSantis because this scam pack, Ron to the Rescue, shuttered its doors. Because it looks like a sus pack, because it is one. I actually think it benefits the campaign so you don't have another unaffiliated pack out there siphoning money away from people to where they think they're donating to a campaign, but it's not actually going. You don't really see the measure of where your money's going actually in the campaign sphere. But the media is not reporting that. They're acting like, oh, this is a big, bad sign. It's actually a good sign. To me, it suggests they got shoehorned out. So you got to be careful of this stuff. And not every pack is the same. In fact, I think maybe there's like, I just think you should just donate to the campaigns directly. But I thought that was a really disingenuous thing. We have a lot more on the way. Riley Gaines is scheduled to join us at the bottom of the hour. She got into it with, but Keith Olbermann tried to get into it with her. I hate the sexist response that if women complain or make a valid criticism about men competing in their sports, then other men attack them and say that you just suck at your sport. What? That's like saying, Keith Olbermann, you suck at having babies. You're a horrible subpar person because you can't have babies. I mean, you see how ridiculous, yeah, exactly.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So there's a fight now in Texas over a plan to charge electric car owners a new registration fee, 8 times higher than what gas car drivers pay. Interesting. It's the measure is expected to bring in $38 million in revenue for the state. Now, previously, Texas offered a tax credit of up to $2,500 for electric vehicle purchases. But now this measure that is being pushed through, they're saying that EV owners can only benefit from federal incentives, $7,500 in credits. They said that this new incentive, people say it's going to discourage people from buying electric vehicles, and it asks whether Texans pay more. I mean, If they're because you have to think of that. If the state is going to have to spend money to put in the infrastructure for charging and all of that, then why the hell should I pay it as a gas guzzler? I love guzzling gas, right? I'm just saying, like, why should I pay, right, Kane? Right? It's like, you know, it's the toll. You got to pay the troll toll if you want. Yeah, I can't say the rest of that song. But you know what I mean. All right, moving on. After more than 100 years, gray wolves appear in Giant Sequoia National Park. So, yay, gray wolves are back. That's great. I like them. They're just giant, wild kind of dogs. Don't go pet it. It's not a puppy, not a coyote. So they said they're cautiously optimistic that they're going to have more packs. So, yay, nature's coming back. So a guy was arrested for a COVID joke. That actually happened. I didn't think that this was like in the United States, but it was. It was Waylon Bailey. What a name, by the way. I don't know why. He's got a lot of Y's in his name. But he was arrested for a coronavirus joke that he posted on Facebook. It was in 2020. And they said that his post caused sustained fear. I think that's so dumb that someone, that is the dumbest thing ever. That's how dumb everything was back then. He posted it in 2020, and they went after him with like a terrorism charge and all kinds of stuff. It was a joke that he posted. And then he said that the ruling, because he was finally cleared, but the fact that he had to go through all of this for that long, he had said, share. He says, the joke was, Parish Sheriff's Office have issued an order of deputies come into contact with the infected, shoot on site. And he literally, and he hashtagged it, we need you, Brad Pitt. I mean, it was a joke. And they literally went at him for that. I think all the people who went at him for that should be fired. And then they should be, you know, publicly ridiculed to the point where they break down and cry. Also, let's see. This, an airline launches an only adult section for international flights. That's kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, does it matter? I mean, you're in a giant metal tube. It's a Turkish-Dutch airline. They want to remove the disruption of children's noises. What about the disruption of adults? Because I find adults to be more annoying because they know that they can be annoying. Children don't necessarily know, but adults do. And then they continue being annoying, even though that they can be annoying. Sounds lame. I don't know. We got Riley Gaines coming up next. Stick with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen on a station in your area, coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast as well. YouTube, Facebook, and Channel 347, DirecTV. One of the things we've covered here quite regularly, I think almost every single day, is this, it's an attack on women. It's an attack on women's sports. And it's just so wild to me that we even have to have this conversation on basic biology and science. And one of the questions that always, you know, is in my mind is, why is it that women are the ones? Why are women the ones who have to compromise everything? Why are women the ones that are supposed to give up everything from medals at different events and, you know, this and that and spaces? It seems incredibly unfair as it is. And of course, this really got kickstarted with the whole story about Leah Thomas, the swim team in Pennsylvania, and with Riley Gaines, because she was one of the first to speak out against this. And I think up until that time, a lot of women, even though we live in this era of so-called empowerment, a lot of women felt afraid to speak out, because when you see women speak out about these things, they are harassed nonstop. They're called TERFs, which is a sexual slur. They have a lot of misogyny directed towards them, and it gets violent, very violent sometimes. We had video of Gaines. She was speaking at an event in California, and she was like chased into a classroom because the Trantifa were outside, and they were incredibly loud and incredibly intimidating, and anybody would have been worried for their safety. Well, since then, Gaines has been incredibly busy, and she's now the director of the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. And she joins us now via Skype. Riley, appreciate you joining us today. Thanks for everything that you're doing, because like I said, I mean, I had a cousin at a school in Missouri, and they literally went through this whole thing. She was an athlete. It was in Hillsboro, Missouri, and there was an 18-year-old male that was demanding to share locker room space with this family member of ours. These were minor girls, and this was right about the right after you really started speaking out. And I think a lot of, I really do mean that, I think a lot of women, especially girls in school, didn't really know how to deal with this because of the pushback they were getting. Have you obviously, from your perspective, you've seen a huge change in this.
Certainly. But I will say that pushback is very real. You know, what I went through at my university, what they told us, it's really nothing short of criminal, the amount of emotional blackmail, gaslighting that they put us through. They told us, you know, if we spoke out, it's something that would follow us forever. You'll be labeled a transphobe forever. You will never get a job. You will never get into grad school. You know, you'll lose your friends. You'll lose your scholarship and your playing time. When we were concerned about the locker room, specifically Leah Thomas's teammates, actually, and they sent an email to their administration expressing their discomfort. 16 of these girls signed on to this email, as well as their parents. Their university responded back with, if you feel uncomfortable seeing male genitalia, here's some counseling resources that you should seek in an attempt to re-educate yourself. They told these girls, you know, you're not allowed to take a stance because your school has already taken your stance for you. They told us that if we did happen to speak out and any harm whatsoever were to come towards Thomas's way, you know, whether that's physical, mental, emotional, through social media, whatever that harm looked like, they told us that we would be solely responsible, and we would be responsible for a potential death, and that would make us a murderer. And you don't want to be a murderer, do you?
Wow.
Of course not. Who would want to be a murderer? But that's what they used to keep us quiet.
The abuse. I mean, that is, it's so incredibly abusive. What, Riley, why is it that if a man feels uncomfortable, if he wants to say that he's a woman, and if he feels uncomfortable in men's spaces or on men's teams, he's accommodated. But if women feel uncomfortable having their spaces or their teams invaded by a man, they're told to just, well, everything that you just described. I mean, they're threatened, they're blackmailed, they're told they have to do this. They aren't accommodated. They're just told to step aside. I mean, I thought that, you know, we lived in this empowerment equality era. Doesn't sound like it. Why is there this difference?
Look, this is the patriarchy, right? This is everything that once, again, really not to even make this issue political, because what I've noticed is it really isn't a political issue.
Right.
The overwhelming majority of people agree on this, actually. You wouldn't know it if you just watched the news and saw how politicians voted. But despite that, this is coming from the party that once championed themselves on advocating for women and fighting for women's rights. Yeah, forget that. Now we have the same administration, these same people. They can't even define what a woman is. Mm-hmm. But make no mistake, this isn't just women's sports. Notice the language that we're using. It's only changing as it pertains to women. Mm-hmm. Why is mother deemed offensive? Why are we as women, why are we called menstruators? Or cervix havers, uterus owners, most recently by Mr. Rachel Levine, a Biden appointee, were called egg producers. And again, this is happening one way. Why aren't we calling men, which I'm not advocating for this, why aren't we calling men sperm producers? Right. Or, to be totally frank, erection havers? Because we know that sounds so silly, but it's totally okay to reduce a woman down to her biological function. Mm. Same thing in prisons. Why aren't, you know, women who identify as men going into men's prisons or joining men's fraternities? This is only happening one way. And it shows who's really at jeopardy in regards to a lot of this gender ideology propaganda. And that's specifically women and specifically children as it pertains to the education system, for sure.
Yeah, we're talking with Riley Gaines. There was a story that we'd actually talked about on air a couple of weeks ago, and it was this woman who finally felt comfortable enough. She's in the UK. She came forward. She was saying that she didn't get into the nature of her surgery. But it sounded like it was a very serious surgery that she had to have immediately. She had gone in. Our doctors were very concerned. But when she was there, there was a man who was dressed as a nurse who came in, and it made her feel very uncomfortable considering the, you know, female intimate nature of her surgery and her procedure that she was getting ready to go through. And she had voiced a concern, and then they had canceled her surgery. This was in the Daily Mail. They had canceled her surgery, and it ended up complicating it. It got worse, and it made it a lot worse for her when she finally was able to go in. There was a firestorm of support in her favor. But you had mentioned, you know, Rachel Levine, you know, a man who is dressing and wants to identify as a woman, but who's also over at HHS, which is bizarre to me because I feel like that is the politicization of health. Do you feel that if you had not stood up in the way that you did and pushed back and encouraged other women to push back, do you think that we were on a road to start seeing this sort of discrimination against women, even within healthcare, like this one story?
Certainly. And you're right to call it broader than just sports. When I was first impacted, I only saw it as sports. But now that I've taken a step back and see this for what it really is, you're exactly right. This is a war on women. And it's a slippery slope. That's what we're seeing. I think a lot of people are becoming aware to the fact of how slippery this slope really is, which is why more and more people are becoming more bold. They're becoming more empowered to state the obvious. Really, what I'm saying, what you're saying, it shouldn't require courage to say these things. It's the most basic of truths that we know as humans, man and woman. It's the essence of humanity. It's how we're all here. And they're asking us to deny that, which is a pretty Orwellian thought. You know, they want us to say 2 + 2 = 5. And we know it's not. But so many of us, whether that be coaches, whether that be medical professionals, whether that be people in the church, pastors, preachers, we're adhering. We're saying 2 + 2 = 5, and we can't continue to do that. Or it's just a matter of time before it's the next thing. Mm-hmm. And again, I know that sounds grim. I know that sounds almost conspiracist, right? But truly, would you have imagined 5 years ago we'd be here where we're at now?
Not at all.
I think it's important to look into the future about where this could potentially lead us.
I have to ask you about your dust up that you had with Keith Olbermann. I get mad for you when I see this sort of abuse directed at you. I'm not surprised who it comes from, but this is just one of a long line of people who they tried to say that because you had tied with, you know, Leah Thomas and you, which they, and I remember, as I remember, they gave him the trophy, but you didn't actually get one, which I thought was also unfair. It's a whole other thing. But Keith Olbermann had, responded to something that you had said because you were talking about Women's Bill of Rights and he accused you of just sucking at swimming, which I thought was an incredibly ironic and misogynistic response to your efforts to do everything that we're talking about here. That I know that has to make you mad. How do you deal? You're a young woman. How do you deal with that? And then what do you tell through your Leadership Institute? Because that's a hard thing for women to have to deal with. Young women who are coming up, whether it's in sports or whether it's in the workplace, this is the kind of stuff that they have to deal with. I mean, it just makes me want to slap everybody. How are you talking to women to respond to this?
I'm very fortunate that I'm secure with myself. I know my intentions. I know my heart. I know there's no hate in my heart anywhere. And so when someone like Keith, who worked at ESPN, right? I mean, someone who was supposed to understand sports, what I've accomplished in my sport being a 12-time All-American, I'm actually still the SEC record holder in the 200 butterfly, one of the fastest Americans of all time. I mean, as you mentioned, that's just blatant misogyny to say I'm bad at swimming. So I'm fortunate that that does not hurt my feelings by any means. I'll put it on the record right here. I would love to challenge him to a race. It might actually disprove my argument, so maybe it wouldn't be good for me because I do think I could take him in the pool. But what I would say to other women, which is why I launched the Riley Gaines Center through the Leadership Institute, we need more leaders. We need more people to be unapologetic and standing firm in the truth. That's what my center will do. It's a training program where we are going to inspire and embolden and provide resources and support to individuals.
It's a sisterhood.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly is. And that's what my sport was to me for so long. And so I want to create that for other girls so they feel confident to know that we're in the overwhelming majority. We really are. And to know just how crucial it is to do what's right, do what's just, and again, do what's true.
Good for you for that, because I know a lot of, especially now, women need a sisterhood. And especially coming up with all of this stuff now, they've needed it now more than ever. Riley Gaines, you can find her at the website is RileyGainesCenter.org, the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. Congratulations on your well-fought and ongoing fight and for inspiring an army of women to stand up there with you, because that's what it's going to take. Appreciate what you do. Thanks for joining us
today. Thank you very much.
Of course. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of broadcast, and we'll have Today in Stupidity on the way. I don't think Oberman can swim. No. I know he sits in his bathtub. That's a long-running joke, but I don't think I'm curious. We'll have to see.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Kane and I and Steve were all talking about masks and like how apparently, I don't know why people are still, we still see people. You said it's either old white liberals. I see stupid young commies. It's one of the two. There's never an in-between.
I see it's the super blue moon. It's that damn moon.
So Kane went from that damn Carol Baskin to it's that super blue moon.
Damn super blue moon.
This is now where he is. Everything is the blue moon. How long can we blame it?
Only the rest of today, I think.
So the rest of today?
Yeah.
Like, but not tomorrow no more?
No.
It just goes away that fast?
It'll just be plain old stupidity.
Me knowing nothing about the moon. So it's not a super moon tomorrow. I mean, it's like, that sucks if it's only super for, you know, one day.
It's less than super moon.
I'm telling you tomorrow. What. I don't know. This is me trying to. We were talking about weather and everything else because it's we're in a cold front. It's only 99 degrees, so it's a cold front here in Texas. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a cold front. But it's the super. It's just what we needed during a crazy primary process, right? We needed that. Yeah, said nobody. Absolutely nobody. So I don't know. There's like a whole bunch of stuff that I still wanted to make sure that we get to, but you'll know that our discussions with our guests are going to be up on YouTube, and we'll also have stuff on Facebook. And then we got Republicans dragging themselves back to Congress, and then there's going to be a budget battle, and then you're going to be inundated next week with Republicans want to shut down the government. And this is a bad thing. Why? It's not. Not at all. One last quick thing. We got stuff up at Chapter and Verse. I had a piece up there yesterday. There's a couple of really good pieces up there, including how the media is trying to memory hole the Wuhan-educated UNC Chapel Hill killer. But also, I have a piece up about how I don't think Mitch McConnell should have to step down. And I'm not saying this is like some kind of Mitch McConnell stand. I just think we should apply the Fetterman rule, right? Everybody knows the Fetterman. I mean, You have apply that rule to McConnell. I don't think that his senior moments, because he had that freeze, I don't think that that outpaces his actual times of productivity, especially when you compare it to Fetterman or Feinstein or even, good heavens, President Daddy Showers McUnity. But, I mean, Fetterman can't even figure out how to put anything on but cargo shorts. And President Bob Peters can't stop comparing like these tiny little grease fires to like an epic wildfire like in Maui. So, one other thing, too, even though Kentucky passed a law where if there was a vacancy, they would appoint a Republican senator, the Democrat governor had vetoed that. And I just think that they would try to contest the constitutionality of that. And I do not want to enable a Democrat to appoint a Democrat when we do not have any room to lose in the Senate. So his term ends in 27, and I think he's got 2 years of leadership. So, no, I mean, clearly people disagree with him on certain forms of policy, but that judicial agenda from the last president would not have happened without him. So, you know, that is part of his legacy. So there's some good and there's some bad there. So just saying, yeah, I'm not about enabling and making Democrats fight easier for them. So, no, I think he should stay there and stay there. I mean, Nancy Pelosi's still there. She's in the background doing something. Nobody knows what she's doing. Where is she at? Where is she even at? All right. Yeah. Kane mimics drinking.
She's drinking.
Yeah. All right. Today's stupidity.
All right. So I was looking at Robert Malone's account on Twitter, and he was putting out, I saw this video from the World Economic Forum, and this guy is talking about how convenient it's going to be for everybody to calculate their carbon footprint. I'm not kidding. Listen to this.
Through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint.
What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
I'm sure Big Pharma Bro is going to probably come up with a way to make
like,
that
what
and sell
the,
it.
Who the hell's going to sign up for that?
Not I, but some people will. All right, my brother from another mother, Sergio, is in for me tomorrow, and I'm going to be back with you on Tuesday. So make sure you sign up, Chapter and Verse, Substack. There will still be some things going out there, and you can always find us on Facebook and YouTube. Like and subscribe. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll be back with you on Tuesday.